how I rationalize continuing to make to myself is this idea of trying to hold myself together in front of other people while being on that verge of tipping over. And that's both the terror of the creative process and outcomes, and also the joy and source for the most exciting moments.
Welcome to How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity, where artists pull back the curtain on their creative practices and share how they listen, play, embody, imagine, model, and collaborate towards discovering something new. In this episode, we speak to performance maker, writer, and teacher, Nitin Vengulika. Nitin recounts how the comedic forms and gestures he first discovered in his childhood are now expressed in his film and stage personas, which embody a sense of the terror and beauty of creative not knowing, the sense that you are always on the edge of discovering something new.
My name is Nitin Vengulika, and my pronouns are he, him, and I write things and I perform things and I think about art. I think about things, or I move through space in a particular way, and then I use that thinking or that moving to make something that reflects those thoughts or movements. I like to write things that are humorous, or some people might find humorous, that play with the relationship between sense and nonsense. So structures of meaning making and sense making, and where those structures fall apart. Whereas nowadays I write a lot of things, but initially that impulse to make things came from just moving in different ways. Steve Urkel and Mr. Bean, the Ministry of Silly Walks and all of that sort of stuff. They just had a very distinctive physicality that was where my impulse to be creative or to perform or to make things came from, was to move in certain ways. A lot of my childhood was spent imitating white men imitating Indian men. And so in year four, I played the role of Mahatma Coat in our year four production of The Footy Show. And Mahatma Coat was former Australian cricketer Greg Ritchie in brownface, in a turban, presenting national Naan news on The Footy Show. I gained a temporary but nevertheless important for me popularity in year four in my class from doing that. I was participating in my own stereotyping, or stereotyping of my own culture, for approval. And so my brother and I used to imitate Peter Sellers as well from The Party, where he's in brownface and a bumbling actor who is mistakenly invited to a big Hollywood party. So there's always been this kind of double appropriation or something in my relationship to my own cultural identity. Coming out of that lineage of physical comedy, you know, Chaplin and Keaton, which I was also a big fan of, coming out of Mr. Bean. And there's an element of that that's remained in my body and my physicality even now when I'm doing a lot of text-based stuff. So text is one of the primary tools that I work with. Texts as textures, textuality and texturality. A lot of those are dense philosophical texts as well. A lot of the persona that I perform is based on intellectual posturing. So I draw on a lot of philosophical texts and a lot of literary history and avant-garde references, half-digested references that the persona that I perform recycles and reappropriates. When I started, I only did silent performances, so it was very much about moving around and finding different ways of moving. But with the writing stuff, which has come later, I'll just start maybe working on a sentence and keep working on that sentence until a kernel of an idea emerges out of that sentence, and then it just start to write around that sentence, and it not necessarily in a linear way or in not necessarily writing its stories, but just playing around with words on the page, and something grows out of that. After I've done some initial exploration through typing, I sit back and think through the ideas that I've come across and try to formulate them into some sort of concept that I can then return and more consciously apply to the work that I've developed. And I've always aspired to be much more disciplined, but I've never been able to find that discipline. Yeah, I often will figure things out over a long period. I see it as maybe not just relationship between discipline and flow. I sometimes joke that my practice, why I make art, is really to irritate and confuse people. But I like this idea of working from difficulty. I did teach a writing course last year, and I'd give a writing task, and then once they had finished, I'd ask them to write for another 5 minutes. The times when they can't think of anything, or when they've exhausted their initial impulse and they've reached that point of difficulty. And so that's something I try to do in my approach to writing as well. When I reach that moment, when I hit the wall and I have nothing, how do I get myself out of that? And I think that's a great source of creativity. A lot of staring at the wall and just sitting in one place and then getting up and walking around and then coming back. Sometimes it's about just picking up a book and reading a couple of sentences to get the mind moving again, or sometimes it's physically moving around and just tuning into almost like the mindfulness stuff of thinking about how my body's feeling and where it's situated in space, and staying with that for long enough until another thought intrudes and kind of forces its way into that space. Something that stayed with me is Jacques Tati and Buster Keaton. They have this sort of forward lean. They're always on the verge of tipping over, moving into a new space, trying to hold themselves together as they navigate that arrival into a new space. That's how my body is often comported when I perform, that forward lean, but that's also how I think about the writing process and arriving at ideas. It's like, what am I tipping over into? What am I arriving into? And so process of performing, but the process of writing or creating is always this process of arriving at something. And so it might be arriving at a version of selfhood, might be arriving at a story or a way of talking about things or a way of narrating the world. And so sometimes when I'm stuck, I try to reflect on what am I arriving into and what am I inviting the prospective audience of this work to arrive into. And so one of the projects that I've been working on recently is called The Village by the Kids, with Claudia Chidiak, who's the producer, and Nick Wishart and Phil Downing, who've done the sound design. And I've worked as a writer on that project, so working with maybe 10 or 11 or a small group of year five students, or around about 10 years old, that age group, and getting them to engage playfully and critically with their surroundings by asking them to reimagine the streets that they live on as part of a village, and what it means to be part of a village and what a village needs to have in it. And so there's this balancing between surrealistic flights of fancy and much more, I guess, wholesome, earnest thinking about community and about relationships and about spaces in the form of this construct of the village. And so you get a lot of very sweet responses to what a village should be and how people should behave in a village, and ideas of respect and ethics and responsibility on the one hand. And then you also get this surreal flights of fancy that allow them to extend that village into something other than what it is. They hopefully start to realise or think about their capacity to contribute to community and to communities and to the future of communities. So maybe it's just about making them more engaged citizens, but creative citizens. This idea of authoring and narrating the spaces that they move around in, and something that maybe they feel excluded from sometimes, by allowing them to author and narrate those spaces, to give them some sort of sense of ownership over the spaces they move in within. I've always found collaboration difficult, but again, I totally embrace that difficulty, because you have multiple people coming with different interests and with different expertise, and often you can feel like your ideas are not being heard or they're not being included in what's being made. So there's a resilience and ability to quickly let go of things that I appreciate about collaborative practice. It requires you to move with the process. You can't be fixated on too much on your own visions of what that work should be. Just sort of have to let the work be fluid and evolve in its own way. With three or more people, you're constantly being moved off your mark, shifted, pushed by other people's ideas. Collaboration is a risk because you have a certain idea in your head and you get pulled and pushed in ways that you may not have anticipated or may not even like while they're happening. And the other risk, I guess, is making lots of different kinds of work when you have an audience for one thing and they have a certain expectation of the kind of work you make, and then you make a two-hour durational piece, very minimalistic, based on repetition and slight variations of gesture, and that audience crosses over expecting some sort of absurdist dramatic text. I feel like every work I've made, I failed at it, but not in a romanticised philosophical way of like creative practice as failure, but I actually legitimately think that I've not succeeded in making any of the works that I wanted to in the way that I wanted to make them. Theatre is a constantly dissatisfying experience where we're auditioning substitutes for what we're trying to arrive at. So again, this idea of constantly arriving at something, that's how I think of my creative practice. On that idea of leaning and the comedians who lean, these figures are always trying to hold themselves together in the face of the industrial and urban spaces of modernity. And there's something of that holding oneself together as well in the creative process. How I rationalize continuing to make it to myself is this idea of trying to hold myself together in front of other people while being on that verge of tipping over. And that's both the terror of the creative process and outcomes, and also the joy and source for the most exciting moments.
This episode is part of a series of interviews with extraordinary people talking about their creative practice. You can find the rest of the series wherever you go to get your podcasts. You can also purchase our book titled How to Play in Slow Time, which unpacks the theory, practice, and teaching approaches to creativity from Brill Publishers at brill.com. How to Play in Slow Time was created and produced by Charlotte Farrell, Alexandra Talamo, Brioni Trezise, and Maria White. Edited and scored with original music by Tom Hogan. Special thanks goes out to the Technical Resource Centre and the Creative Practice Lab at UNSW Sydney, where our podcast was recorded. UNSW Sydney exists on lands and waters that have been cared for since time immemorial by the Bidjigal people of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty has never ceded. I'm Brioni Trezise, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity.